This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, L.A. gets a new fire chief after some heated arguments over the fire department and race. And the nation's first Muslim congressman wants to swear in on the Quran. Joining us today from our New York bureau, we've got Robert George, editorial writer at the New York Post. At Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Callie Crossley, social and cultural commentator on the city's television show Beat the Press, and Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of globalization and education and co-director of immigration studies at NYU. He joins us from member station WLIU in Southampton, New York. Welcome, everybody, and let's go to some of the recent news. The Los Angeles fire chief, William Bamatre, left his post on Friday amid a controversy sparked by a racial discrimination suit in the department. The LA Times is reporting that veteran firefighter Douglas L. Berry will be named acting chief of the Los Angeles Fire Department today, first African-American in the agency's history to assume the top job. And earlier this month, the whole fight began over a $2.7 million settlement for a black fireman who suffered discrimination and harassment, allegedly. And he was proven to do so. But Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa vetoed that decision, and efforts to override the mayor failed in city council. Now, the case shed light on two damaging issues that have a legacy in the firehouse: racism and hazing. Friday, the former fire chief addressed the media.
As fire chief for the past 11 years, I will stand on the merits of my record and am proud of the department's accomplishments under my leadership. However, I have always placed the interests of the department above my own personal interest. I am also a political realist.
Callie Crossley, the winds of political realism, saying that what flamed up, to use a phrase, and that could be a Robert George line, in Los Angeles has deep roots and it wasn't just going to be quelled easily. There have been issues with race in fire departments across America, similar to police departments, but I mean, what lessons can we get out of this, Callie?
I think the lesson here, and I have to say that this one feels a little bit more specific than might be happening at some of the other fire departments. I think it is racism and hazing. But this guy, there were some photographs that surfaced which seemed to indicate, this is the black fireman who sued the fire department in the city, that he also was participating in hazing. And for me, that takes the edge off of his complaint. Do I think that the hazing that was directed at him was based in racism? Yes, I do. But when he participates in hazing at the same time, then I think it dilutes what the issue is here, and a very real issue that's happening across fire departments in the country. Let's not forget that a lot of these fire departments have been under consent decrees for years to try to equalize the hiring and the promotions in those departments. And then I look at Los Angeles and I think, my God, the police department and the fire department have struggled for years with these issues. I mean, how do you get to the baseline of it? I don't know. And I wish this guy who's going to be acting chief all the luck in the world, but I think he has a very tough job.
Marcelo, the fire department in Los Angeles was segregated until the 1950s. And in fact, there's a museum kind of documenting the black experience of being firefighters. And these places, the firehouses are places where men live very closely together, men and women, you know, kind of college dorm style. And so there has to be a certain familiarity, whether that breeds contempt or camaraderie is something else. Can we extrapolate any lessons? You know, I think that Callie was saying that this is a very specific case, but can we extrapolate any lessons from what's been going on in L.A.?
I think the most important lessons is what happens when the firehouse becomes more like Animal House.
Everybody's stealing my lines today.
Where the culture, the ethos, the general temperature, let's say, in the firehouse is one that is deeply rooted. Evidently, this has been an issue. The harassment, the culture of harassment, has been an issue now for over a decade with the systematic documented complaints. And in a way, it took this $2.7 million settlement to shake up the political leadership to really begin to systematically address what is, to me, fundamentally a culture of intolerance, a culture of harassment, a culture that really has no place in the context of firefighting, which is, as you say, so rooted in this camaraderie, in this brotherhood and sisterhood, where respect and equality has to have a fundamental place.
And Robert, turning to you, you have a fire chief who has just left his position. He came in as a reformer. He came in to address racism and sexism. Was he just the wrong guy in the wrong place at the wrong time, or do you think that he could have done more to quell the situation before it got this big?
It's hard to say at this point. I think Callie was absolutely right in saying that this particular case kind of muddies the whole waters. It may just well be that that the fire department, like the LA Police Department, is that these problems are so deeply ingrained that it takes more than one person or one generation to get some real change. I mean, obviously, we can go back, obviously, to Rodney King and look at the police department, and even another 10 years later, until they recently hired Bill Bratton a couple of years ago, formerly of the New York Police Department, to still try and clean up that because of the entrenched corruption. So it may just be that that LA's problems are so problematic that we need yet another person to sort of push the ball a little bit further.
I want to go to you with another topic, Robert. Senator Obama, he went to speak at this Global Summit on AIDS on Friday. It was led by Rick Warren, author of the best-selling book, The Purpose-Driven Life. Warren is an evangelical Christian, but his message through his books has reached people of all different denominations. Mm-hmm. But apparently, within this Global Summit on AIDS, his fellowship of people in evangelical Christianity were not so happy with Barack Obama. They said, how can you put someone up on a pulpit who supports abortion rights? So was it smart of Rick Warren to bring Barack Obama into the fold? What impact will that have on evangelicals who don't want to see an expansion of the tent?
I think it was a lot smarter of Barack Obama to accept the invitation. This is very interesting. What's happening here, because we've been seeing over the last few years, not so much a split, but we've been seeing an expansion in evangelical concerns. In fact, one of the people on the Republican side who's apparently starting up an exploratory committee is Sam Brownback, who is an evangelical Catholic, if you can kind of combine those two. Mm-hmm. And he's been one of the people most concentrated on the issue of AIDS in Africa. And so on one side, there are these evangelicals who really think it's important that it's not just focusing on abortion and gay issues and so forth, but they need to expand it. However, there are still some of those who want to keep a narrow focus, and you saw that basically with the vetoing of the person who was supposed to be coming in to lead the Christian Coalition, because he had more of an expansionist view, whereas the base of the coalition, or at least the people who say that they speak for the base, said no. We feel that we need to focus on the, quote, moral, unquote, issues.
You know, Callie, it strikes me that it's kind of a political reversal, where people on the left are usually seen as at each other's throats and people on the right are often seen as walking in lockstep. Of course, both of those are exaggerations. But at this point, there certainly seems to be a real conflict and debate within the evangelical right about how to combine issues of faith and issues of politics. What can we expect to see over the next couple years, maybe?
I think you're going to expect to see a lot more conversation. I think it's really important to point out that it was Rick Warren, purpose-driven life Rick Warren, who initiated this invitation and who stood by him. And the photograph of Rick Warren standing there holding hands with Barack Obama in that service is really quite powerful. I mean, this is a man who people have been quoting, his books anyway, from ship to shore across this nation. He is such a fundamental speaker and thought leader in this faith movement on the right that it has got to have reverberations. If nothing else, if he begins to open the conversation for people to say, well, now, isn't it true that poverty is something we need to be looking at if we say that we are Christian? Isn't it true that we are to embrace others if we say that we are Christian? I mean, if that's what we're talking about in terms of expanding our mission, and that's, I believe, how he's coming at it, then absolutely there's going to be all kinds of conversation. Now, where that falls on the political line is something else again, because there's a lot of discussion now about whether or not folks of all stripes ought to be messing in politics and instead should be concentrating on sort of general people uplift, because there's certainly a lot of work in the world to do if you just focused as a Christian on taking care of the core issue, which is poverty.
All right, Marcelo, I'm going to actually switch you over to another topic, if you don't mind, or maybe you can blend them both. Since we've been talking about faith, you've got the first Muslim elected to Congress, Keith Ellison, who we've heard here on News and Notes, scheduled to take the oath of office in January, along with his freshman class of legislators. Now, he has decided that he wants to be sworn in on a Quran. You know, some conservative commentators, including Dennis Prager, said he needs to swear in on a Christian Bible, which America holds as its holiest book. This is Prager. He went on to say, if you are incapable of taking an oath on that book, you don't serve in Congress. What do we make of this fight, Marcelo?
Well, he's swearing to uphold the Constitution of the United States and not the Quran. The Quran, in fact, is the sacred text of over a billion people. It is his sacred text, and it seems to me that we can't confound the two issues. His job as a U.S. representative will be to work to enhance the power and the integrity of the U.S. Constitution. The fact that he's choosing to use his holy book in this ritual ceremony of being sworn in is, I think, his own personal choice. We can't confound the two issues.
Robert and Callie, I wonder if either of you have any historical perspective. I certainly know that, you know, among the people called our founding fathers, there was already some disagreement over what role religion would play in public life, and that's one reason why certain members, of the early United States government said, let religion play no role, because that way everyone will have a freedom of choice. What about the issue of the Bible? Do either of you know whether the Bible was enshrined early on, or did that just come to be something that we've used later?
Well, as I understand it, it was there. It was there early on. I mean, there was if you visit the Capitol, you can see a chapel that was built in the early days for members to come in and reflect and so forth. But on this particular issue, I mean, I really do think it's absolutely pathetic for Prager to take this kind of a stand, because first of all, he has to keep in mind, and just in terms of the way the swearing-in ceremony is actually performed in Congress, all members are actually sworn in at the same time on the floor of the House. What this is actually going on are these sort of individual, sort of public relations ceremonial swearing-ins in their offices. And a member of Congress can use a Bible or not use a Bible. He can swear or he can affirm. I mean, it's really to that member's choice. And I mean, I think for Prager to say, if you don't want to use the Bible, you shouldn't even be in Congress, I mean, is absolutely embarrassing, frankly.
Kelly?
Well, here's the historical reference that I think we need to keep in mind. The whole country was founded on religious freedom, for goodness sake. I mean, this is the man's religion. He is, as Marcelo has pointed out, not saying I'm taking up the forces against America. I am here to represent Americans. I am American. You know, let's get over this. He happened to be here on Harvard's campus last week, and I was speaking to him about, some of the issues of just being the lightning rod for this. And one of the things that he said was, in Minnesota, it was well known that he's been a Muslim all this time. It never became an issue until it looked as though he was going to a national scene. So I think that in that way, Robert is absolutely right. All these people are freaked out that this man is, getting some attention and that he's a part of the Congress, and they're just you know, turning the silliest kinds of things to try to foment fear. And I think if there's anything that can happen from his being in Congress, it'll be, even though he's going to end up being the voice of Muslim America to some degree, his representing to people that I am both American and Muslim, and I feel loyalty to both, and my faith does not interfere with
that. And there was, I mean, there was legitimate, and this actually came up in his campaign, there was legitimate reason to criticize him because of his relationship with the Nation of Islam and things he'd said about Louis Farrakhan and things like that. You know, all that is absolutely legitimate and fine in terms of political debate. But in terms of attacking a man, you know, specifically for what book of faith or what book of worship he wants to use, you know, to show his affirmation of his beliefs, I think is beyond the pale.
Well, it's interesting that it's even taken us this long as a nation to have this question raised. So I'm sure it will happen again in the future, but we're going to have to leave it right there. We've been talking with Robert George, editorial writer at the New York Post, Callie Crossley, social and cultural commentator, and Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of globalization and education at NYU. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And as always, if you'd like to comment on any of the topics you've heard on our roundtable, you can call us at 202-408-3330. That's 202-408-3330. Or you can send an email. Just log on to npr.org and click on Contact Us. And please be sure to tell us where you're writing from and how to pronounce your name.